Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by Healthcare Now Radio, part of the Media Answers Network, and is sponsored by the law offices of Myrick O'Connell. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Dr. Tashfeen Ekrem, Chief Medical Officer at Luma Health. Welcome, Dr. Ekrem.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what I always like to do before getting into the main part of my discussion with the guests is to allow each person to provide a little bit more of a background in terms of who they are and what they do. So the floor is yours.
Well, great. No, thanks for having me. So my name is Tashfeen Ekrem. I'm a Chief Medical Officer at Luma Health. Luma Health is a patient engagement platform. We automate messages for healthcare providers and healthcare systems to help automate the patient journey. As all of us who've been sick have found it can be difficult to navigate the healthcare system. So we kind of help providers automate that communication. And a little bit more about myself, I split my time. I'm a practicing radiologist and working with the company. At my core, I love to work with technology, and early on in my career, I saw a lot of problems in my practice and a lot of other physicians around me that were that I saw that could be solved with technology. And so later in my career, I've taken time to work with Luma Health and found Luma Health, which basically uses technology and helps marry between providing healthcare and technology to solve some of these really challenging problems in healthcare.
So that's really interesting to hear that, you know, you've always had this, it sounds like a drive to have technology be helping out. So is that something that you've always had that passion even before getting into medicine, or how did those two interests dovetail?
Yeah, that's a great question. So my dad, he's a software engineer. So I think I grew up in a nerdy house. And then even when I was like an undergrad, I took a lot of software development courses. And I think what, at least for me as a physician or someone who wanted to kind of leave the place in a better and leave the world in a better place, I saw technology could help me scale my skills or scale what we could do. So as a physician, when we look at something, it's kind of like the tree view, looking at one patient at a time. So you have one patient in front of you, you're trying to solve the problem of the patient, but that patient might also have problems that might be much more global to you. And I saw that technology could help solve that. And it helps you take that forest view of the healthcare system and be able to solve that. So it's been kind of something like a bit core to me as I've kind of grown up. And so now it's been exciting for me to be able to work with Luma Health to kind of really take that to fruition.
So kind of building upon what you were just describing, you know, I feel like there's probably two different ways of approaching challenges and trying to solve challenges. If you're thinking about it from, you know, kind of that software engineering or technology perspective and the medical perspective. So I guess, could you be able to maybe highlight if that is accurate, that there are different ways of approaching it, you know, what those differences are, and then what the benefit is of being able to meld the approaches together?
Yeah, sorry, could you clarify a question? What do you mean by approaches?
So I guess different ways of thinking or about or perceiving a problem, you know, because, you know, one of the things that I always hear, you know, being a lawyer, is that it's in law school, you're trained to think about problems in a certain way, and it's, you know, you always hear that the adage that's, you know, that they retrain your thinking to be not, you know, how it would necessarily be if you're just haven't gone through that type of training where it's, you know, you're kind of always issue spotting in a particular way. And I feel like I've heard similar things about medicine where it's, you know, you're running through your differentials and you're trying to use the evidence-based background. So I'm just wondering, you know, are there different ways of to think about problems that are trained from an engineering perspective as opposed to a medicine perspective?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Sorry, and that clarifies it. Yeah, you know, so medicine is very, outside of the research world, it's very regimented. There's this kind of rule-based, you know, patient comes in with a heart attack, you know, this is the kind of things you have to do. And it's protocolized for a reason, because you want to standardize healthcare and you want to make sure you're delivering the greatest healthcare based on the greatest research that there's available at that time. But for a physician, you have a problem in front of you, and there's kind of rules and ways, not to make it completely formulaic, but a lot of it is formulaic, but there is an art to medicine in terms of being able to see through some of the noise of what the signal is in terms of what the patient might have and how you treat it. But a fair amount of medicine is relatively formulaic, Again, to standardize care and to make sure you're delivering the best of care. On the flip side, if you look at software engineering or the business world, a problem is in front of you, and there are obviously rules of engagement, but outside of that, you can do a lot of testing or a lot of thinking outside of the box, so to say. And so there is definitely a very difference in the methodology in terms of how software engineering works and how medicine works. So you could have a problem that, for example, your boss puts in front of you, I want you to create a software that solves this. And there's probably hundreds of different ways you can do it, but there will be some ways that will be better than the other. And I think this is what's really interesting is that for me also as on a personal level, where it medicine uses a very formulaic and uses that part of the brain, it lets the software side has a little bit more of creativity in that, in the terms of that you have this problem in front of you and you can solve it, and the rules of engagement are a little bit wider, and understandably so, because on one side you're dealing with life and death and with patient outcomes, and so unless you're in a research setting, you don't actually want to experiment too much. But on the other side, it gives you a lot more room to play around, you know, so to say, with what you want, how you want to solve the problem.
Right, and that's a really interesting description, because it's, if I'm understanding correctly, you know, you're saying in medicine, it's not that innovation and new thinking aren't there, it's, but it takes longer for that to be adopted potentially, as opposed to, you know, on the business side, you know, it's kind of innovate or you're going to fall behind and potentially lose your business. So, you know, maybe thinking about those dichotomies, you know, it seems like one of the areas for where innovation is meeting when you're talking about both technology and medicine is the adoption of digital health platforms. So, you know, I guess from your perspective, you know, where do you see the development of digital health tools? And obviously, you know, with your clear background in terms of founding a company that is premised upon that idea.
Yeah, I think the greatest challenge is often is getting access to data. And so I think so if you look at being based in Silicon Valley, I think everyone feels like it's kind of the saying is that every nail to a hammer, or everything looks like a nail to a hammer, or whatever that is. So over here, everyone breeds technology. And so they feel like the solution to everything is technology. But I think one of the challenges that healthcare innovators that are trying to propose a technology solution is the access of data. And unfortunately, this has been kind of a long-standing problem for everyone in the healthcare system, but particularly vendors, whoever's trying to get into it, is that as physicians and healthcare providers, we live in our electronic medical record. And so there's a lot of rich data in there, but it's hard to get out. And to bring a solution that is a standalone solution or that tries to get some data, but not all of it, that's where a lot of significant challenges come up, because organizations either don't have the ability to share the data, or they're very skeptical or very difficult to get access to the data because of, you know, privacy law governance. And so I think the greatest challenge has been by and far for any healthcare tech company is just getting the access to data. And I think, unfortunately, that'll continue to be. There's been obviously a lot of movement in that space, but I think slowly we're moving in the right direction. But still, that turns out to be the greatest challenge for a lot of healthcare innovators.
And so, and I think you were saying this, as you said, having the access to data is really pretty much essential in terms of the development. But what about being able to get solutions implemented? Because arguably, you know, if you're able to get it implemented, that's one way to either create the data you need or to get access to it, because then, you know, you're fitting more squarely within some of the regulatory schemes that you're referencing.
Yeah, no, I think getting up and going is, if you can, so one of the nice solutions, some of the nice healthcare companies that I've seen that have scaled up quite fast are ones that can provide value without getting access to data. And so a really good example of that, particularly in our COVID world that we're living in today, is actually telehealth. What suddenly people realized, or I should say organizations realized, is that, okay, our clinics are shut, but our patients still need access to care. And, you know, because I've had to cancel all my appointments, now it's impacting my bottom line. So how do I fit that gap? And so a lot of healthcare organizations suddenly have beefed up their telehealth offering, and they've basically taken on a very independent or very standalone products. And I think in the acute phase, it's worked out quite well for them, because one, it's given them the opportunity to start generating a little bit more revenue, but more importantly, also be able to deliver healthcare to patients who still need it, but who are unfortunately not able to come in physically because they may be at risk for endangering other patients or their own staff. So, but I think what's important, what this really showed is that for the healthcare innovators out there in the digital space, you know, data is still important. And I think what you'll see with even these telehealth providers is that as they go forward, there's going to be ask from them to be able to provide data, both being able to pull it out from their EMRs and being able to push it back into the electronic medical records. But in the acute phase, there's a lot of value still in there in being a standalone solution. A lot of organizations have adopted this because it's kind of like there's the gaping wound and the band-aid to put on that gaping wound in the short term.
So in thinking about, you know, how the different solutions are being rolled out, you know, I guess what are some of the challenges or ways that you've seen them be implemented?
Yeah, I think what I've seen is that when they're standing up these solutions, one of the most important things that is often overlooked is the patient experience. And what I mean by that is that the patients have a very varying level of technological capabilities, you know, the different kind of devices they have, whether they understand how to do this. And so what we have found is that one of the significant challenges is that, okay, so someone's purchased a telehealth vendor and they're, hey, we're ready to go. But the connection rate with the patients, unfortunately, can be a little bit low based on the vendor you've chosen and whether they've taken a kind of a patient-friendly perspective. And then what that really means is that is creating tools for the patient to be able to make sure that they're ready for that telehealth visit. So the most frustrating thing for a physician is that they've scheduled a visit with you, and then they're sitting there, they have the video open, and then they're trying to IT troubleshoot, trying to figure out why the patient get in. So I think that's one of the most challenging issues that a lot of the healthcare providers that are jumping on this telehealth bandwagon are seeing. Probably the other one that I think they're starting to get a little feel for, but they haven't quite gotten it yet, is how it works into their existing workflow. Because a lot of these solutions are standalone, or they're willing to use these standalone solutions, it's not integrated into their scheduling system. And so what they're doing is they're juggling kind of two different systems right now, where they're scheduling a visit in the telehealth platform, and then they're scheduling it also in their EMR, and then they're doing a lot of manual effort. So what they'll do is they'll maybe give the patient a phone call 10 minutes before checking in. Hey, are you ready to go? Here's your code you want to enter, or here's the link you're going to use. And so there's a lot of kind of manual touches that are happening. And I think it works in the acute phase again, because one is the volumes are a little bit lower and they're still learning. But I think they're starting to scale up this approach, they're starting to learn some of the challenges of doing that and starting to understand that, you know, okay, it's great, we've been able to get it to work, but we've got to figure out how to actually make this work within our workflow. And I think anyone who's worked in healthcare knows that healthcare workflows are pretty complex, and just throw on more work on top of that, it just creates for more problems than good.
Yeah, and disrupting workflow seems to be one of those points of argument against using a digital health solution, because as you said, it's physicians and other clinicians are already so busy that to have yet another task to have to go through just, you know, is viewed as either unbearable or not worth the effort. So, you know, to address some of those challenges that you were just highlighting, do you think that, you know, it's going to have yet another tool layer in, so that way it's, you know, kind of creating the integration among the telehealth solution and the other systems? Or are you hopeful that, you know, one or the other side will help with that more complete integration and creating a smoother workflow?
Yeah, I think it'll be a kind of a marrying between the two, where some of the telehealth vendors out there have been around for a bit longer, so they know how to work with the electronic medical records or how to integrate well into the workflows. And so I think oftentimes these telehealth vendors also offer a standalone solution, and so a lot of folks have jumped on that version of it. But I think going forward, I think for sure the attention needs to be paid to the workflow and to how we can. And as everyone knows, or at least in the healthcare space, is that there's a significant burnout amongst providers. And to create more work is definitely going to be a significant challenge. But getting doctors and healthcare providers more comfortable with it and making it seamless in the workflow will certainly make it easier. And so one of the things that we've done at Luma Health is that, so before this COVID world, there were a lot of regulations around like who could do a telehealth visit, where it could be done from, and how it could be done. And so one of the regulations was that the physicians couldn't do it from their house. They actually had to do it from a healthcare site. Now, the patient, of course, could be anywhere. They could be at their home, or they could be at a nursing facility, or wherever it was. But the physician had to physically be at a healthcare location, in a clinic or in the hospital. But they've lightened that, of course, because a lot of physicians aren't going into their healthcare practice and are stuck at home. And so when we were building out our telehealth solution, we need to be aware of that, because the doctor at home may not have access to the same kind of equipment they have access to in their office. A lot of the telehealth solutions that people had erected up before this COVID, they'd bought dedicated cameras, they had a dedicated room for a telehealth visit, they had bought hardware that was meant to optimize that experience. So when we built out our solution, we wanted to make sure that it accommodated for what is commonly available to the general population, physician or not, both on the patient side and the provider's side. And so I think it's important to kind of pay attention to that, because going forward, you know, who knows where we're going to end up. But I think making sure that the provider experience seamlessly integrates in their workflow and seamlessly allows them to be able to access it from wherever they want is going to be very important to kind of not go down that provider burnout path.
No, I think that's a great point. And for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Dr. Tashfeen Ekrem from Luma Health, and we've been talking about development and implementation of technology. And Dr. Ekrem, you were just talking about, now that so many practices have been implementing telehealth and hopefully, or maybe optimistically, other solutions during the course of the COVID-19 crisis, I think you were starting to lay out of that hopefully the use will continue to evolve. So obviously we're kind of still in the middle of it, but maybe starting to speculate as to the future, kind of where do you see telehealth and digital health more broadly going as we start transitioning back out of an emergency setting into a more regular life?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And so, honestly, no one knows. But I think what's been great is that CMS and a lot of the healthcare payers have taken a great approach and great strides to make this a lot easier. And I think this is going to make the physicians feel a lot better. And I'll give you a small anecdote. One of our clients is an ear, nose, and throat physician. And so he had a patient scheduled to come in for a growth in his mouth. And then, COVID happened. And so they had to cancel all their appointments. But the patient still needed to be seen because they were worried that this thing growing in his mouth, was cancer. And so he said, I guess I'll just do a telehealth visit. And then so the visit happened. The patient took the phone, opened the mouth, and kind of, adjusted the camera until that area could be seen by the physician. And then he was able to make a diagnosis all over the phone. And I was talking, and if you asked him, before this, would you have done this? He would have given you a hard no, saying that, I am not comfortable in dealing or in managing patients from a distance, because I think innately for us as physicians, we want to put our hands on the patient. That's kind of how we've been trained. But I think if there's a silver lining in all of this COVID thing, is that it's going to make physicians and healthcare systems broadly a lot more comfortable in being able to take care of patients from a distance, being in a position where they can't actually put their hand on the patient, but being comfortable in managing the patient by just looking at them and getting feedback from them from what they have to say. So I think just from a healthcare system and a physician's comfort standpoint, I think it's going to help us have great strides, because a lot of us who are a little bit hesitant about, whether it will work or not, I think it'll make us a lot more comfortable. And of course, on the flip side of it, what will also make physicians comfortable is that it's the reimbursement side. So in the acute setting, a lot of the rules have been lightened. The CMS and a lot of the other large healthcare insurance payers are paying at parity or at similar for physical visits. So you can do a telehealth visit and get paid as if the patient had come and physically seen you, which is great, because again, as healthcare providers, got to pay the bills. But also, I think it helps them be comfortable in transitioning from one to another. Now, I guess the question will be is that, how much of what they have allowed today will be able to stick to tomorrow. I mean, there are certain things like, for example, they have allowed physicians to use non-HIPAA compliant or non-secure ways of having a video visit. So a physician can have a telehealth visit over FaceTime, over WhatsApp, or the variety of other things that, we use in an everyday social interaction. So you're actually allowed to use those things as long as they're kind of one-to-one and they're not broadcasting like kind of like a Facebook live feed. And they will reimburse for it. I think some things like this will not stick because I think they've just allowed this because physicians might not have access to the right telehealth vendor, or they want to, you know, be able to do it in a very cheap way. But certain things like being able to pay for parity, I think there will be a significant amount of that will stick. The other rule that they had lightened is that previously you could only do a telehealth visit with established patients, so you couldn't take on a new patient. Now you're allowed to take on new patients and bill for it as a new patient. And I think as physicians know that usually the new patients are the ones that at least in the upfront are you can bill for at a higher rate. And so there's, I think they've set the stage, CMS and the healthcare payers, for a broader adoption of telehealth. And I think it'll make physicians a lot more comfortable with the whole process. And I think there'll be a significant amount of healthcare going forward that will be practiced, quote unquote, at a distance. I think so one, and what was also very interesting about this is that, so one form of the telehealth is this real-time video feed, which, you know, I guess is very similar to FaceTime, but, you know, hopefully over a HIPAA compliant or secure way. But I think this will also get physicians a lot more comfortable in being able to manage patients distantly, even not in a real-time video feed way. And so this is like using asynchronous messaging methods. So for example, once they become comfortable that I can let the patient be at a distance and they can do well, I can also let them be comfortable being like, I can do automated check-ins with them. So I can send a message and say, for example, patient with recent discharge and heart failure, to making sure that their weight is doing okay so that they don't get readmitted, or making sure that they are not getting short of breath. So I think what this will really do is help get healthcare more comfortable at taking care of patients at a distance, however that's facilitated, whether it's using video or using messaging. But I think one of the greatest silver linings, so to say, of this COVID thing is that it'll bring out broader access to care for the entirety of American population.
Yeah, and I think the example that you gave is a great way to kind of to really explain that comfort, you know, the gaining that comfort level that you were just talking about. You know, because as you said, the physician that you were referencing sounded like wasn't necessarily comfortable with it, but out of necessity, pursued this as an option, determined that, oh, this particular service was capable of being done remotely or, you know, at a distance. It kind of, you know, with the entire background that you're describing, it's really, you know, during the course of the pandemic, it's the ultimate trial by fire of being able to, it sounds like, really hopefully effectively determine what services are capable of being performed either during with that live video feed or potentially asynchronously. And then since you have somewhat to, you know, arguable freedom to kind of experiment in that regard, you can have almost get it all sorted out now. So, you know, really optimistically, once things start transitioning back and you have offices open again, you can have that divide ready to go of, okay, these are the things that can be handled remotely unless, you know, there is, you know, some real absolute need to come in. And then you can, you know, potentially focus on and have more office time available for the services that absolutely must be performed in person with the hands-on as you're describing.
Yeah, I know. And that's directly on. And, you know, I like to take it back to, so there's something that was put forth by the Institute of Medicine called the Triple Aim. And their goal was they were looking at the healthcare system, at the U.S. healthcare system broadly, and trying to figure out, you know, why are we doing so poorly? So if you look at other, you know, westernized or like industrialized nations, the percentage of healthcare dollars or healthcare money that's as a percentage of a GDP it's been controlled for most other healthcare systems or like healthcare countries. But if you looked at U.S., that number kept rising, and it was rising continuing to rise at a pace that is not sustainable. And unfortunately, though, with that rise, healthcare outcomes are flat. And so the Institute of Medicine kind of tried to figure out, you know, why are we at this junction? You know, why are we spending more and more dollars on healthcare but not getting those outcomes? And one anecdote, I trained in Southeast Michigan, where the car manufacturers are based, and during the crisis, financial crisis that they were going through back in the early 2000s, you know, if you ask them, it was quite interesting. This tells kind of the story here is that if you ask them what's the most expensive cost in building a car, And the answer was healthcare. But if you ask an average consumer when they're buying a car, you know, you're buying a car, but what's probably the most important cost going to the car? They're going to say metal or labor or whatever it was, but healthcare wasn't the thing. But it just showed that the healthcare costs were rising. And so the Institute of Medicine put forward three principles of how we would solve this. So one was improving patient outcomes. The second was driving patient satisfaction. And the third was reducing healthcare costs. And they were putting this forward as a way to solve this healthcare pandemic, so to say, in our system. So I really think that, and I might be pushing it a little bit too much, but I really think that the telehealth advances that we're seeing will really be able to drive this, because it will be able to drive down costs, because now you'll be able to give access to care to patients broadly and be able to do it in a much cheaper way. And there's good data out there that certain visits can be done cheaper, but over telehealth, and have the same or even maybe better health outcomes. And then the patient satisfaction, obviously, you know, having the comfort from doing it from your home. And then being able to drive that same healthcare outcome is for certain types of service lines can be done over telehealth. So I really think that the strides that we're going to be taking that we've taken now in the past 3-4 weeks, and just this mass adoption of telehealth, and as we go forward, and as us as a healthcare community in the U.S. from both the payer side and the patient side and the provider side, understand where this can fit. I think there's a good opportunity where we can start to solve some of these very larger problems of, you know, why our healthcare system is kind of at the state it is. So I think, you know, again, I really believe that the silver lining in all of this COVID thing is that it'll get us to become a much more nimble healthcare system. And, you know, this is kind of one of the things that startups kind of fall prey to, is that when they have a lot of funding, a lot of money, they're not very nimble, and they make mistakes. But when you're pushed to the wall, or, you know, when you're put in the hard situation, you find solutions and ways to solve things, and you actually come out, it's kind of survival of the fittest. So I think that's kind of where we're at. We're really trying to figure out where telehealth can fit and really make it work. And I think this going forward will be very important to helping us solve that kind of larger healthcare, the problem that we're having as a U.S. healthcare system.
No, and I think that's as you said, a great potential silver lining to take out of the current situation, and also, I think a great takeaway, because believe it or not, we're already out of time. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Tashfeen Ekrem, for a great conversation today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was my pleasure.
And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at #HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.